On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to Tall Can Sports. For what started off as kind of a dull winter February day in sports and turned out to be anything but, got Matthew Lang here on the old Skype machine with me. Matthew Lang? I'm looking at your Skype handle. It says
wow.
Matthew Lang here. I don't think I've ever called you that in my life. It's Matty Lang. How's it going, man?
Am I in trouble?
Yeah, exactly. If I knew your middle
name. Am I getting grounded, Pops? Yeah. What's going on here?
Yeah, if I knew your name, I'd be throwing it down.
Geez, well, other than that, it's going well. How are you doing today?
Not bad, man. Not bad at all. Just before we fired up the microphones here, you were telling me you were just in Ottawa for the weekend, did the Winterlude thing and checked out, you know, what some of the city has to offer. But I cut you off because I wanted you to save something here for the air. You had an opinion on the arena out here. What's your beef, man? You didn't seem to be a fan.
Buddy, I mean, where to start with that? It's a Scotiabank, right? Is that what it's called now? It's not or is it the Canadian Tire now?
It's Canadian Tire Center now. It's been through several names. It's the Corral Center. It was the Palladium. It's Canadian Tire Center. It's, yeah, you know.
God, what a show. That, you know, it was, I've never seen a stadium. And I mean, I've driven past on the highway in the past and you go, oh, Jesus, out here in Canada. I can see with the complaints, but until you drive out for a game,
yeah,
you can't quite appreciate what a horrible fan experience that is. And for everybody I hear complain about, you know, the traffic down the Gardner and the DVP to get to a Leaf game, for those of you who are in Toronto,
yeah,
and the people who complain about that, doesn't even pale in comparison to what you have to go through to even get to an Ottawa Senators game.
It's easy. Half hour out of downtown, right? And that's with weather or traffic being perfect and
yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, there's really what, two ways in, you know, one from the east, one from the west.
Yeah.
And you all kind of end up on the same street and you're all looking for these parking lots. You know, that, I mean, that being what it is, I mean, once you get into the game, I thought the game ops was pretty good, but bad crowd for a Saturday. I mean, it was a Saturday afternoon, but kind of rough crowd. Nobody was really into the game.
Yeah.
I mean,
who was
personally,
the opponent?
It was the Islanders.
Okay.
Who seemed like they've kind of given up on the season again. But I mean, the Islanders outshot Ottawa quite a bit. But Ottawa, I don't know if you caught any highlights. I know you were busy this weekend. Two great goals. Trying to think of who scored them right now. And off the top of my head, I can't remember. But two great kind of breakaway goals. Beautiful little moves. Got people up, but I'm pretty sure they were pumping crowd noise in.
And that was the Anderson return, right? He'd been away
that
from
was
the team for quite a
right.
while. Yeah,
big shutout. So yep. I mean, he got his props at the end.
Right.
Yeah, just kind of a dead atmosphere. And I've been to, you know, weekday games at the Gardens, which get a bad rap. You hear a lot of people online chirping about the Toronto fans. You know, we spend too much time at the bar, don't get to our seats early enough. There was just nobody in the seats in Ottawa.
Well, part of that, too, like you said, would be the opponent, right? The Islanders don't draw a big crowd. But, I mean, yeah, it's you know, sometimes the crowd up here can be known to be a little quiet, too, right? So it's
kind of interesting, though. I mean, you get to a couple games here in Toronto, and I was at the game last week against St. Louis, and there's still a fair share of St. Louis jerseys.
Right.
A lot of young kids, actually, surprisingly, with Tarasenko jerseys. And if you caught that game-winning goal 20 seconds into overtime last Thursday, you understand why.
You see the torque on his stick before? He's like, good Lord.
He's like a living, walking, talking video game. It's embarrassing for the rest of us.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, you do get the older crowd, too. You saw a couple Gretzky jerseys. We went to Hoops before the game to get some food.
It's a good little spot.
Cool little spot, right? If you don't want to, you know, go through the beaten path of real sports,
yep,
and actually get some food on your plate for that price. There was, I got to say, 2-3 tables full of guys about our age, you know, with the Blues gear on.
Really, eh?
Hall jerseys, trying to think of McKennis jerseys, stuff like that. Like a lot of throwback jerseys I thought were kind of cool. I was expecting to see more of that in Ottawa for the Islanders. You get a lot of guys who are, you know, older than us, you know, in their 40s and maybe early 50s. A lot of, they should be Mike Bossy fans, right?
Denny Pot fans,
right?
Yeah.
You'd expect to see that, but not much. A lot of Tavares jerseys out there.
Right.
A lot of those Islander jerseys in the front row. You could see from where I was sitting.
Right.
A lot of blue in the front row. Yeah, you know what? This was my first game out there in Ottawa. I was more than happy to kind of get on board with the home team while I was there, but
sure.
Not, I mean, the team plays great, good little hockey team they got going on there. I hate to say it, but I don't know if it's the fans are just tuning them out right now or if it is this arena, but gosh, they got to change something out there.
Yeah.
Cause for a Canadian market, that's on a Saturday afternoon game. You got to expect that's going to be a full barn.
Right. They've had attendance trouble up here all year, and, you know, we'll see if they can get it turned around. I think part of it has just been, and I know we don't want to end up too far down this road, but has just been they're in that weird kind of place where, yeah, they look like they're a playoff team, but they don't look like a cup contender, and they don't really have any top, like they have some decent young players. Mark Stone's still a young guy, right? And there's other guys too, but nothing that looks like they will soon be a contender.
That's right.
So at some point, you know, you're kind of like, maybe not to the same extent, but in that what Detroit's been for the last few years where you're still around and you're doing it, but you know you're not a serious contender and you know you're not on the upswing, so what's there to really get excited about kind of thing? So that's
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I'm trying to think of the one guy who scored the goal now, Pageau. I think that's
could
his name.
Could be J.G. Pageau, yeah.
Yeah. God, man, that guy's fast.
He really is, yeah.
God. Whew. Amazing speed. And, you know, we had great seats. We were kind of around center ice up in the 300s and just to watch that guy's explosiveness on the ice. God, you know, I hated it just a little bit more because I know we got to play him a couple times
right
throughout the year. But wow. I mean, yeah, that team can make some noise. Probably not the year this year. Again, my only beef with that place was the crowd a little bit, the barn itself. And I'm never opposed to, you know, fans wearing jerseys with, you know, a player's name that's no longer with the team.
Right.
Unless it's Spezza and Healy.
Well, you know, you got to especially you got to have some balls as a Sens fan to still be walking around in a Healy jersey.
They got to move on past those boys. You know, the Alfredsons jerseys, I'll let those go. Even the Chris Neal jersey, that's cool.
Right.
I get it. You might have bad taste in hockey, but.
Sure, but how different is that really than the number of Domi jerseys that were running around Toronto?
Well, that's right? What I mean. Yeah. I'll let it slide.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. So it was two things. As I said, you know, we're kind of in the doldrums of February coming off a snowstorm and that, you know, everything was just kind of blasé. And then earlier on this afternoon, things just exploded all at once. The Toronto Raptors pull off a trade. And if I'm not correct or if I'm not mistaken, this is a name that you've been mentioning for a little while that they picked up. And the Bruins and Canadiens, big longtime rivals, have a bit of a coaching carousel going on. Where do you want to start here, man? Which one do you want to start with?
Well, let's start with that coaching carousel move, because that was the one that caught me totally off guard. And when we first touched base this evening, you mentioned it to me, and I was coming home from work. I had no idea it had happened.
Yeah. So for those of you who haven't heard, it's last week, the Boston Bruins fire Claude Julien, which at the time most people, I think, thought was ridiculous as one of the best coaches
Stupid.
In the league. And you just handed him a bad team and then blamed him for not being able to get anything done with it. And this week, he's been unemployed for, you know, less than 10 days. The Montreal Canadiens, longtime rival, division rival, gets permission from the Bruins to talk to him and hires him up. And they fire their coach, Claude Julien, while they're in first place in the division, which is also somewhat rare, although not unprecedented. The New Jersey Devils, when in first place, fired their head coach a decade or so ago. Funny enough, it was Claude Julien that was coaching at that time.
You got it.
Yeah, so this was a little strange, and there's some Bruins fans upset that the team would allow him to go to a rival like that. At the same time, on the other, you fired him, right? Like, it's kind of a dick move to then hold him to, you know, not allow him to go anywhere, but you do have that right in the CBA, I guess. What were your first thoughts on it, man? Because to me, this was something else.
That was actually my first thought right there, and you just grabbed it. It's, why did Boston let them even talk?
Right.
And I get you don't want to come off as, you know, I guess a negligent employer or having, you know, something to prove, or you're sticking it to the coach. But while you're paying them, you do have that right. And I mean, if it was this summer, if it's next year, I think it's a totally different scenario.
Right.
But because it's Boston and because it's Montreal and because it's been a week.
Yeah. And it's,
what is Boston thinking?
Yeah, and I guess part of it becomes, right, do you hurt your chances of hiring other good coaches or management people later on if you have a history of kind of being a dick after? Like, I kind of feel like once you've fired someone, you shouldn't still have permission to, or still have to ask that team permission, right, to speak to them. You've said, we don't want you anymore. And I guess as long as they're under contract, you do still have that right, but it's, I don't know. It seems a little bit sleazy. The thing here is there was some rumors that other teams were calling as well. And I guess it would have been, you know, could Boston have allowed those teams to have permission first? This is obviously a key job, right? Montreal, one of those markets that you want to go to. He's a French-Canadian guy. I guess the common wisdom would just be, you know, it's the right thing to do to let him go. But I'm sure fans aren't seeing it that way in Boston after, you know, the way this is all. So not only did you fire one of the best coaches in the league, you handed him to our biggest rival. So,
100%. I agree with you totally on both those points. You know, I guess where to start with it. I mean, you gotta be a good employer, and maybe you do scare other people away. But at the same time, if I'm from a Boston area and I'm a Boston Bruin fan, I'm probably the only people who are pissed right now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody else sees it from the other side. But
Michelle Therrien might be kind of pissed, too.
Yeah. Not exactly the greatest Valentine's Day for him.
No,
you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
And he's got to be getting sick of being fired and,
Michelle
Therrien, you know, replaced.
Got dumped on Valentine's Day by a team that then went back to their ex. So
That's right.
That's kind of rough, man.
And by the same guy he got replaced by last time.
I know.
Right?
Like 2003, I think it was. Michelle Therrien, coaching Montreal, gets fired and replaced by Claude Julien. This fucking guy's following me everywhere.
Well, you know, just to defend the Montreal Canadiens for once, because I never do, there's only so many French-Canadian coaches around in the league.
Yeah, but what do you think of that policy, though? Like, to me, you severely limit yourself in terms of, you know, right now there are, like, Alain Vigneault would also be a really good coach in the league, French Canadian. But if you, let's say 10 years from now, you know, two or three guys have retired and you're limiting yourself to what could be an inferior coach just because you're forcing him to speak. I get why you do it. Culturally, you kind of feel like you need to. But, man, I feel like,
yeah,
you put yourself behind the eight ball in terms of who you can and can't hire.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head the number of French coaches. You got Vigneault, Boucher, Julien, Therrien. Is there anybody else in the league right now?
Yeah, I mean,
Patrick Roy, maybe he's available. Maybe he was expecting a call. I don't know.
I guess it's possible that there's a name out there that we're not thinking of. But, I mean, those are the big ones, right? You've hit it on the head. And
I agree with you. I think you do limit yourself somewhat, and you're starting to see this now. They're reusing the same coaches they did 10, 15 years ago. It's all coming back around again.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always going to be French-Canadian coaches.
Sure.
It's within the fabric of the culture. And I don't think we have nearly enough time to explore the socio-economical, socio-religious
all those pressures in
problems.
Montreal.
Yeah, that even as regular Canadians who love hockey and associate it with our fiber, it just means so much more and something different to them, right? Because it ties into their religion, their sense of Catholicism. Even it's such a distinct place to and culture just in total, right?
Right.
So, I mean, would you want to be that Canadian English-speaking coach, or God forbid, that American coach who comes in? I mean, you'd be second-guessed at every turn.
But if you look at even the last couple of the Montreal fans, if you're good, they forget the last captains, right? Max Pacioretty, Brian Gionta, they have Carey Price in goal. Saku Koivu was captain back in the mm-hmm. If you're good at your job and you play hard and you do they'll get on board. They just want a good winning hockey team. I would imagine they're capable of going, yeah, okay, so he doesn't speak French. Is he a good coach? Then let's go, right? Wouldn't you think?
I think for the most part, I do not disagree with you. I think you'd like to assume that happens all over the place, but all you got to do is look at Phil Kessel here in Toronto as an example of one that doesn't go well all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's it. As long as they're doing well, it's one thing, but what happens when they hit a skid like they have right now, right?
Right.
That Montreal media is going to turn on them fairly quick, and I don't know if you want to be in that position as that, let's say, American coach.
Yeah.
The only other example I can think of that, would kind of predicate what you're saying is if you look at a lot of international soccer now, or soccer in the Premiership in England, right? Mm-hmm. They've had to move away from hiring a coach who's English or hiring a coach who is Portuguese or whatever it might be, right? They're starting, all these countries are starting to expand their searches because they've found that it's limiting.
Yeah. You should just be looking for the best guy, in my opinion, right?
It should be. And I mean, as long as you can talk to the guys on your bench.
Yeah.
I who cares if you can talk to the beat writer from the Toronto Sun.
Exactly.
Or the Star, if those are even around in 5 years. I mean, they might all be on blogging it now anyways, right?
Exactly.
So I think it's, in a perfect world, it's on your merit, but I don't know. I mean, that might be the last one to turn, I don't know if they ever turn away from a French-speaking coach. I mean, didn't they have one of the Hunters coaching for a half season?
That was Washington. But they've had some guys come in there, right? Maybe Adam Oates. Maybe was it him? Guy Carbonneau was in there for a while, although he does speak mm-hmm. French.
That's who it was. It was Carbonneau I'm thinking of.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. So they've had some guys, but he's a French speaker as well, I believe. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that wouldn't have been so it's an interesting thing. I think it's interesting that PK Subban gets shipped out last summer because he doesn't fit with what Michel Therrien wants to do. And now all of a sudden, Michel Therrien's not your guy anymore. I bet you kind of wish you had a mulligan on that. And Weber's been very good for them in Montreal so mm-hmm. far. But I think a Claude Julien team, that he's been able to work with the offensive guys like a Chara, right? Like a Dougie Hamilton when you had him. And you wonder now looking back going, this might mm-hmm. be, did we blow this for a coach we weren't really committed to? So,
they've put themselves in a position after making that trade that they're in a, loosely win now, right? They've got a 2-year window, maybe a 3-year window.
2 years, Bryce's contract's up.
Right. And with a guy like Weber, who's not getting younger.
Right.
Big, huge defenseman like that. It's not like he's all of a sudden going to be a number 6 defenseman, but he's not going to be Shea Weber anymore in a couple years. Right.
Right.
And with salary caps, they've really put them in put themselves in this position. They've got to win now. They can't, they can't go in the first round. They can't get knocked out in the second round this year. That would be looked at as a huge failure for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So bringing in, yes, you're in first place, but they're sputtering a little bit. And going from Therrien to Julien, At worst, it's probably a lateral step.
To me, that's I think they've got a big upgrade. And I know you said at worst, right? But I think they've made a huge. And I think if Claude Julien isn't fired, neither is Michel Therrien. Like, they would have stuck it out with him. They're in first place in the division. But you go, man, he's as you've pointed out, he's a French-speaking guy. He's got a Stanley Cup ring. If we're ever going to do this, we do it now while he's available, right? And it's only took a week, right? They didn't want to wait around for someone else to scoop him up. I think if Julien's still employed in Boston, Therrien's still employed in Montreal.
I'd have a hard time disagreeing with you. I think it's all those points, right? It's a winner. He's a Stanley Cup winner. He's been there before. He understands the culture. He's French.
Yeah.
He kind of hits all those check boxes. And, you know, they're on their bye week right now.
Gives them a little time.
Gives him a chance, get him in the room, get to know the guys again, get the systems in place, and come back, you know, on Saturday night and start, you know, wheeling again, which is a scary thing for the rest of the league, because when they were on at the beginning of the season, did they look like world beaters?
13-1-1 to start the season, and they are 500 since. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if they can ever turn that back on, it's going to get scary. So let's move along, because I know you are, I'm sure... One of the earlier times we had you on this season, the move that went down today is almost exactly the way you predicted it would happen, and that this was a guy that they should be going after. Tell us a little bit about Serge Ibaka coming into the Toronto Raptors.
Serge Ibaka is the Valentine's Day gift that everybody in Toronto wanted. Okay. He's coming in with a box of roses. He's got the rose petals all over the floor. This is exactly what this team needed from last year and including right now. So, you know, Toronto kind of missed out on him in the offseason, trying to get him from Oklahoma. The package apparently that Oklahoma wanted was huge. Included Corey Joseph, Pat Patterson, a pick, and maybe one other guy. So, you know, the Raptors balked. He ended up going to Orlando, not having his best year right now.
Right.
But that a lot of that's getting checked up to the fact that Orlando team's just so poorly put together and is very much a disappointment all around. They're kind of a funny team. They're the exact opposite of Toronto, where Toronto's very heavy in the backcourt. We have too many guys playing point guard positions, guard positions. They have way too many guys clogging up those big man spaces. So kind of a good fit. Toronto was one of the only teams with some picks and some cap room, some assets to move. And I think with him, Ibaka, being a free agent this year, Orlando was kind of keen on moving him. So, you know, Toronto comes away with the guy they want for basically a song and a dance.
So they trade Terrence Ross in a first-round pick. Is that correct? That's the deal.
And it's the lesser of the two picks the Raptors currently own. So the Raptors currently own obviously their own pick, but they also own the Los Angeles Clippers pick as well. So we're looking at something in, you know, the 25 to 30 range is what the pick's going to be.
Okay.
So kind of a minimal kind of don't worry about it pick.
Terrence Ross. Just never really seemed to click here, or at least not to the extent fans thought that maybe he was capable of, or would that be fair to say? Like, he always kind of seemed to be one of the whipping boys a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he definitely had his share of fans. Mr. Inconsistent is the best way to describe Terrence Ross. He's the guy who went off for 51 points, who won a dunk competition, who would show these random, you know, flashes of brilliance. And then he was also the guy who would shoot, you know, air balls from the three-point line. He was the guy who actually looked like he was getting out of the way on defense, and which is really why he became the whipping boy, right? I mean, you can have a cold night shooting the ball in the NBA, but you can't not play defense on a winning team, right?
Right.
And it's very evident when the rest of the team's playing defense and you aren't. And, you know, that's why he got, you know, a couple years ago he was on the starting rotation. The Raptors picked up Carroll and some other guys, and he was slowly moved to the bench. And, you know, at this point, he's not even the sixth man on the Raptors. So, I mean, definitely an integral part to the way the Raptors are built, but we also have a guy in Norman Powell who pretty much steps right into Terrence Ross's role.
Hashtag the We the Norm.
Continue. We the Norm, exactly, right? Yeah. So they're going to kind of, they kind of switch out. I mean, Terrence Ross definitely shoots a lot more than he drives. One of the biggest things about him was he just doesn't drive. You know, he doesn't go to the net, which means he doesn't get free throws. So when he's shooting threes and he's hitting those and he's knocking those down, he's on fire. Yeah, you know, the barn's going and everybody's erupting and everybody's great. But those nights where he's cold, you got to make those, you got to manufacture those points.
Right.
And he doesn't do that. Where a guy like Norm Powell, a little grittier, it almost seems like he drives on every single possession to the bucket. He's always trying to get a layup or a dunk. Great, tenacious defense. More of a traditional role guy for sure. And I mean, if you look at the numbers, again, Terrence Ross averages about 2 free throws a game. He shoots around 38 to 40% from 3-point line. We bring in a guy like Serge Ibaka, who's going to go right to the starting lineup for us. So we're bringing him in. He also shoots about 38% from 3-ball.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually don't lose that like too much there. He averages about 12 to 14 points a season. Traditionally, a great rebounder. He's going to pull in about 8 to 10 rebounds a game. But more importantly, I think for the Raptors on this team, his blocks. So you got a guy who's led the league in the past in blocks. He's a 3-time all-defensive player in the league, as recently as 2014 as well. He averages 2.5 blocks a game over his career.
Well,
and
so
that's something that the Raptors have missed since Biombo left.
And you'd certainly be better to speak to this than me, but when I was watching those first two series in last year's playoffs that were so frustrating, when even the layman like me knows the Raptors are supposed to be better than these guys, and it's just you're getting taken 7 and it looked like they couldn't defend. And I know you were mm-hmm. losing your shit on Dwayne Casey and his defensive system, and maybe that's fair too. You'd know more about that than me, but it just looked like some of these guys didn't want to do it. Like it, or weren't capable of doing it, but they yep. just couldn't lock it down at any point, right?
Yeah, and that's, you know, you can. There's that old thing, right? Can you defend if you know, some people are just born to defend, and some people just don't have the effort to defend,
right?
And you got to figure out which guys are which. And the problem is, you can have guys who just can't defend. DeRozan's a great example of that. His job is to just don't screw up on defense,
right?
But you can't have guys like JV who just poor footwork out there, and he just gets taken to task every time, which is why I know you don't watch too many Raptors games, if at all, right now, especially during the regular season, but you look into the fourth quarter and there's definitely an absence of a 7-foot Lithuanian. So to, you know, the average fan, you're like, well, shouldn't you put your big, huge center out there to block some shots? But you got a guy who just doesn't move his feet quick enough to actually defend properly without getting fouls.
Right, okay.
So now you're bringing this guy in, Serge Ibaka, who's a tough-nosed player. I think that the sneaky part about, you know, about him, the X factor maybe about Serge Ibaka, is he's also kind of mean.
We could use
which
that.
Which is something the Raptors miss. You know, they're a nice team. Everybody's buddies. You know, they smile for the camera. Somebody's got to be the bad guy in this team, and it could be Serge Ibaka. He's definitely tough. He's not going to back down from anybody. He's traditionally a power forward, but in the new NBA, he's going to be playing some center for this Raptor team. You're going to see some fourth quarters with him playing center with Pat Patterson at the four, and that's going to be our big men out there. And in that case, you're getting two great defenders, guys who can block, who can move their feet, rebound, block out. Biggest issue personally with JV is that guy, just, you know, after 5 years now in the league, he still can't block anybody out. And when you're 7 feet tall and you can't get in somebody's way, it's almost like you got to assume you're trying not to be in somebody's way at that point, right?
For sure.
Just by accident, you should be there, quite frankly.
So if I'm not mistaken, the team has lost 10 of 14. Kyle Lowry comes out a night or two ago and says he's concerned. There's been some kind of comments like that around the team. They go out, and I guess it was DeRozan who said, you know, he didn't come right out and ask for help. I think this was the same night, but he said, help's always appreciated, or if we can add to this team kind of thing, right? Masai Ujiri wastes no time, goes out, he gets this done. In your mind, after watching them sputter the way they have in these last 15 games, does this solve the problem? Or was the problem more in their head, and maybe this is now going to go to their legs and go to their heads in terms of getting some energy back in it, and holy shit, we got this guy, let's roll kind of thing? Like, how do you think this affects them?
Listen, every other basketball fan in Toronto knew there was a problem. Okay. So you hope that your two star players know there's a problem.
Right.
You know, and you hope they're just being polite and not saying it too early.
Sure, yeah.
Right? I mean, they still got to go in the dressing room with these guys. Obviously, there are stars, right? They're, yep. We're going to live and die by those two guys. But, you know, we can't forget, this team was not going to get past the Cleveland Cavaliers. That was just not going to happen. And we had talked about that before earlier this year, whether it was on the podcast or just texting between ourselves. This wasn't a championship team.
Right.
There was no way that was going to happen. So I think Masai Ujiri knew that. He tried to get Ibaka earlier, you know, in the summer. He tried to get Paul Gasol. Apparently that they just kind of missed on that one when Popovich stepped in and picked him up.
Right.
They knew this was an issue. I think it was just waiting until the right time to make the move. The quote I saw from Masai Ujiri today, just before we called each other, was that he said he was kind of negotiating the trade, and that line from Kyle almost hurt them.
Oh,
because now everybody knows, right. You know, the star player is not happy.
Hey, your like, guy wants help. Now you're going to pay for it. Yeah.
And he's already negotiating and trying to get them to sign on the dotted line. Right. So I think this has been in the works for a while. You got to imagine anybody knows who anything about basketball knew this was the issue for the Raptors. So this was happening. I think this is what they needed. I think this solves a heck of a lot of problems, right? It gets Norm Powell in a lot earlier. We get rid of, just to put into perspective, right? The Raptors were trotting out JV at center, and they were throwing out Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl, who were two rookies, right?
Those
were
two draft,
right? Exactly. And now they're you know, dressing those guys, starting them, playing them, you know, 15 to 20 minutes each a night, and there are draft picks this year, and that's who we're putting up against NBA caliber power forwards. And that's not going to cut it in this league. And that wasn't going to cut it in the playoffs for sure.
Right.
I mean, you can get through the regular season like that, but there's no way you're getting through the playoffs with those two guys playing power forward. We had Jared Sellinger. You feel bad for him. He got signed late in the year when the Raptors ran out of other options, but then broke his foot, had to get a plate inserted into that fifth metatarsal. So, I mean, basketball players have to be able to move sideways.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that in the same season. You get a plate put in your foot. So he's looked awful, to say the least. And you feel bad. It's not his fault. But he also wasn't going to be part of that solution to push us over the hump either, right? He was kind of a stopgap. He was the guy, you know, that, you know, every other girl at the dance said no. So he was maybe our fifth option, unfortunately.
All right.
But when Ibaka became free, the Raptors stepped up again and kind of made that move. You hope this is enough. The other thing that happened today was Kevin Love for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I was going to ask you about that. He goes down. Yeah. They're saying at least 6 weeks.
At least 6 weeks, which means at best he's coming back for the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Best case scenario.
Not likely to be at 100% if he does. So that leads me to two questions here as we kind of wind this down. I'll ask them both, and I'll let you kind of circle it around. Does this, even before the injury, would this have put the Raptors closer to defeating Cleveland than they were when they played them last season? And following that, do the Raptors have interest, you think, in locking this guy up? Obviously, they'll see how this goes, but will they have interest in signing Serge Ibaka as he's going to be a UFA? They'll have the ability, I believe, what do they call it, the bird rights,
correct.
That they can pay him more than anyone else to stay. Do you think that'll be something they're interested in doing long term?
All right, let me try to tackle these kind of in succession here. Sure. But I think with Ibaka, they can definitely compete against Kevin Love and the Cavaliers.
Right.
Or I should say, you know, LeBron James and the Cavaliers. But with a full-strength Kevin Love, they can now compete with them. Because now you got a guy you can put down the middle. You can, you know, you don't have to let Kyrie Irving just drive on you every possession. Even LeBron James is going to think twice about driving the lane with a big guy like that down the middle. So that definitely, it changes the complexion of defense on this team.
Mm-hmm.
He's another true defender. You know, the first kind of lockdown defender, true lockdown defender we've had. I know they try to sell Damari Carroll as a true lockdown. He's definitely a great defensive player, but Ibaka is a whole other level.
Okay.
And he can defend multiple positions. So you can put him on Kevin Love. You can put him on LeBron James. You can move him around the court. I mean, he's great like that. he's a guy who's worked in a system like this, right? So he comes from Oklahoma, where it was Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, right? So he's used to getting his, you know, 15 touches a game, and he's happy.
Right.
It's actually a good kind of fit for him to be the number three guy,
right,
on a competitive team. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he molds in. You know, the nice thing is in basketball, you don't need as much time as some other sports to really mold as a team. So midseason trades can make a much bigger difference.
Right.
That being said, they still need a couple games, right? I'm not expecting the Raptors to all of a sudden come in and just go gangbusters and run the next 20 games off the table. I mean, that'd be way too much to expect at all, but they're going to come in and they're definitely going to be a better team. They're going to still put up 115 points a game. The difference is you hope they start, you know, holding teams to 95 to 100 points a game,
right,
instead.
Yeah.
And that'll be the big thing. Now, with Kevin Love hurt, I think this definitely makes it a seven-game series. Not that Raptor fans need another seven-game series in our short history. We're all going a little gray because of that.
Yeah.
You know, you hope now that in however the ping pong balls kind of fall, whether they meet the Cavaliers in the second round or in the semifinals, it doesn't matter. You got to beat them at some point.
Yep.
So whenever you play them, you play them. And I think now we've actually got a legitimate chance. We still need a little bit of luck. You need Kyle Lowry. You need DeMar DeRozan to really have, you know, the playoff seasons or playoff series of their life together at the same time, not individually anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you need, you know, Kyrie Irving to have a bad game. You need LeBron James to have a bad game. You need a little bit of luck on your side because, let's be honest, it's still LeBron James.
Yeah.
Right? So he's still going to win a series by himself. However, now there's at least a conversation to be had about it. Where, you know, 24 hours ago, there was no point.
Sure. Right. Which has been my contention all year, right? Why I'm finding it so hard to get into it is just we're just watching the march to the loss to Cleveland, right? And
mm-hmm.
So.
And totally understandable, right? I mean, you could even start to sense that at the games that people were, you know, fans are showing up, but we kind of all know how the book ends.
Yeah.
It's like watching the movie Titanic, right? You know at the end the boat's going down.
Yeah.
So you can be emotionally attached all you want, but really it's your fault if you're crying at the end of the movie.
Yeah. You knew what this was all about.
You know how it's going down, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a Tinder date on a Tuesday. You know how this is ending. It's fine.
I saw a great ad for a new dating app that's called Hater or Haters or something, and it pairs you up with people who hate the same things you hate.
That's a solid idea, actually. I feel like we should have come up with that. Yeah, we totally missed the boat.
Seriously, people who hate the Sens. In terms of long term, how do you think this? You think the Raps will be interested in locking them up long term, or is this going to be more of an experiment?
I think the intention is to keep him around. I think that's why they made the overtures for him this summer. I don't think the intention is that he's a rental. If that was the case, they wouldn't have been the guys chasing him all last summer.
Right.
I mean, now because it's rental season, it's going to depend how this goes, right?
Sure.
If they do well, if they kind of turn the season around, they put the brakes on, start hitting the gas again, whether they make it to LeBron, whether they get past LeBron, I think what's most important now is how that team gels and how they look. Right? It's going to be interesting because you've also got Kyle Lowry and Pat Patterson as free agents. So now you got three big free agents hitting the market all at once.
Yeah. You got to figure Kyle Lowry becomes, you know, priority one, obviously, right?
Priority one, and you got to take a look at the other guys getting money this year, this past summer. He's getting a max deal, right?
Okay.
Or as close to it, just like DeRozan did.
Right.
And it's hard to argue to say one is more important to this team than the other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you need a guy to score like DeRozan, but you also need a guy to run your team like Kyle Lowry. And it's hard when they're top of the table, you know, 3 years running now. So the interesting thing is Kyle Lowry and Ibaka have the same agent. So, you know, for whatever that's worth, maybe you're negotiating with the same guy at the same time, which gives you just a little bit of a heads up on everybody else in the league.
Yeah.
And if they like playing with each other, well, maybe it makes it that much easier, right?
You know, if each of these guys take just a little less, we can make this happen, we can keep this together kind of thing. You're talking to the same agent.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Where the results of this year matter is because if they make it to the semifinals again or the conference finals, and they really, you know, they really put it to the Cavaliers, or they beat the Cavaliers, that might give MLSE a reason to pay some luxury tax.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is something they've kind of shied away from in years past, but the team's never been good enough to need to either.
When you see it, right, where Rodgers is part owner of MLSE, and they need to understand as well as anybody else with what they've been through with the Blue Jays. You pay up, man, you can start to make your money back in a hurry, right? And,
easy.
And I mean, I know the Raptors already do pretty well with attendance, but in terms of more hats, right, more everything, TV viewership, if you start to be a big deal,
mm-hmm.
and we've seen it already with what happens in Jurassic Park, right, and all these sorts of things. They need to understand that sometimes it's worth it to pay just a little bit more, and you'll get it all back.
Exactly. And, you know, the Raptors are great at coming up with a new jersey every year.
Right.
You know, this year it was the Huskies. Last year it was in, you know, the OVO jersey. The year before that it was an Army jersey and then a Canada Day jersey. And I'm sure they'll come up with something new next year.
Yeah.
Who knows what it'll be. But then you get to sell another Kyle Lowry jersey and another Serge Ibaka jersey. It's hard as a fan because you know they do well. You know they make a lot of money. You also know the Canadian dollar's not so great.
Yep.
That being said, as a fan, it's super frustrating because nobody wins a championship in the NBA without paying tax.
No, you're absolutely
so
right.
So you're just waiting for the team to kind of say, okay, we're going to do it. And any way that they keep any two of those three guys we just talked about,
mm-hmm.
they're going to pay tax.
Yeah.
You know, even if they move somebody, they're still paying tax. So if the team goes out in the first round, there's probably going to be some changes. If they make it to the conference final again, I think we're, you know, you're setting up for another 2-3 year run
yeah.
with the Raptors. So, I mean, stuff to definitely look forward to and time for, you know, you coach fans to get back up and get back on the bandwagon and start paying attention at least to a little bit of basketball, starting with this weekend's dunk competition. I mean, then you can turn the game off itself, but we'll at least watch a dunk competition because you never know what's going to happen.
Just like any all-star game, the game itself sucks, but sometimes the night before there's some good shit going on.
That's right, and we're getting a new dunk competition winner this year since, unfortunately, Levine, who was going to go for his third title in a row, tore his ACL just about 10 days ago. So he's out for the long haul, which is unfortunate because that guy can dunk like MJ, quite frankly. So it's gonna. I'm not even sure who's competing this year, but it's always something good. So something worthwhile to tune into, but more importantly, something to tune into for the last quarter of the season, right? See how these Raptors kind of finish up and how they stack up against the best in the East.
As we wrap this up, have you allowed yourself to sit back for a second and go, how much fun could this spring possibly be in Toronto with where the Leafs are at right now, with where the Raptors could be at come, you know, man. The Air Canada Center every night could be just going off, right? Like
every night there's going to be a packed house outside the ACC on the big screen.
Yeah.
Inside the ACC, all the bars are going to be packed. I mean, that's one great thing about the city. It's when playoff time comes around.
And we're in them.
Yeah, and we're in them for once. You know, it's hard to get a table. It's hard to get a seat at a bar,
yeah.
at a restaurant. Every place has got the big screen pulled down. Just doesn't matter every night. It's crazy. So, looking forward to, you know, you hope the Leafs can kind of sneak in there, get a little playoff experience as well.
Yeah.
But God, it's going to be a fun time in April, May.
And
this,
I mean, people are a little down on the Jays right now, but once they get up and running too, man, this April, May has the potential to be unbelievable for Toronto sports fans. It's could be crazy.
Yeah, still, and like we talked about maybe, you know, what was it, about a month ago, 2 months ago, still lots to be excited about the Blue Jays as well. So you're
sure,
right.
Yeah.
April's going to be a little bit of a show in this town, and quite frankly, the sports fans in the city deserve it.
Unquestionably, man. Man, this was a good one. There's a lot going on. All of a sudden, just came out of nowhere. In one day, we had big news stories that, you know, after a couple of quiet days, so... Appreciate you doing this, Matty.
Hey, thanks for having me on, bud.
Always appreciate the insights, and we'll see the rest of you on the next episode of Talk and Sports.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at tallcanaudio.